This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakravarti.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Earlier this month, the governor of Vermont, Peter Shumlin, did something remarkable. He devoted his entire State of the State address talking about one thing, the epidemic of opiate addiction in Vermont.
In every corner of our state, heroin and opiate drug addiction threatens us. It threatens our safety. It threatens the safety that has always blessed our little state.
Shumlin listed a grim litany of facts. The number of Vermonters seeking treatment has increased more than 700% in the past 13 years. 80% of inmates in the state are there for drug-related crimes.
The governor also talked about policies and solutions, and he's received a lot of attention for that. But today we're going to hear about a different part of this story. We're going to talk about some of the young people who've borne the brunt of this addiction epidemic, and with some of the deeply compassionate professionals who are dedicating their lives to help them.
Bess O'Brien and Dr. Fred Holmes were in the audience on the day Governor Shumlin gave his speech. O'Brien is a filmmaker, and her new documentary, The Hungry Heart, follows the work of Dr. Holmes, a longtime pediatrician in St. Albans who has treated more than 100 young patients who are struggling with addiction. And in this scene from the film, the mother of one of Dr. Holmes' patients describes the long and horrible reach of her son's addiction.
It will rip the closest family apart. And it's not just the addict alone that feels it. It's the grandparents, it's the aunts, the uncles, the mom, the dad, the siblings. It affects the whole family. And you become, or they become your addiction. I told him I hated him. I told him he was a junkie. I threw a shovel, I wanted to hurt him like he hurt me. I'll never forgive myself for what I said to him that day. I felt like I was nothing. I have lived my whole life for my children, and I will till I die.
That's from The Hungry Heart, a new documentary from Vermont filmmaker Bess O'Brien, who joins us now. Bess, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
We're also joined by Dr. Fred Holmes, a pediatrician at the center of Bess O'Brien's new film. Dr. Holmes, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
So first of all, Bess, let me start with you. What inspired you to follow the work of Dr. Holmes and to make a film about opiate addiction in Vermont?
Well, ironically, I had actually made a film about 12 years ago about heroin addiction in Vermont, because in the early 2000s, heroin started raising its ugly head here. And I live up in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and I was asked to make a documentary film focusing on families struggling with heroin addiction. So I made that movie. We toured it all over Vermont. We raised consciousness. We ended up showing it to the State House. The film helped push the opening of the first methadone clinic here, et cetera, et cetera. So I made that film. Then I went on and made other movies, did other projects. And then 3 years ago, Fred Holmes from St. Albans, Franklin County, which is above Burlington, who had been working with young people for many years in his pediatric office, had started working with folks dealing with opiate addiction, mm-hmm. and was interested in making a movie that focused on the human stories of these people. And he got a hold of me, and the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and the movie that has come out of this, the documentary, is incredibly moving, because you're right, you do get right to the human story, the human face, the human impact of this scourge of prescription drug and opiate addiction in Vermont. And this is a problem that obviously that reaches well beyond Vermont. New England just happens to be an epicenter of it. Dr. Holmes, let me ask you, I mean, you come across as such a calm and gentle and sensitive soul, a pediatrician of the old school, if I might say. How is it that so many, you know, more than 100 young people ended up coming to you for help with treatment for their addiction?
As it shows in the movie, one of my youngsters, who I'd known since birth, walked in and asked me to help him. And I honestly didn't know what he was talking about. So that started a process of some pretty intense education. We had a grand rounds on opiate addiction at our little hospital. I got in touch with the folks at Maple Leaf Farms and Valley Vista, talked to people at the state, took the course, got the magic number so I could prescribe Suboxone, which is buprenorphine, which is the principle behind medication-assisted therapy. And then developed a very close relationship with the Howard Center across the street from my office, where I was in what they call supervision, and I don't think that was for being bad, every Wednesday morning for 8 years. And it was a steep learning curve, but once the word got out that I was able to prescribe Suboxone, we received something like 3,500 phone calls.
Wow. I mean, you say in the film that the culture that these young people had found themselves, the culture of drug addiction was completely foreign to you until then.
Oh, and it still is.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, did you realize the depth and the extent of the problem?
Well, that's where the movie came from. We soon figured out that we didn't understand what these kids were going through. So a good friend of Beth and mine, Katie Tanner, who happens to be one of my patients, did a little quick survey. And the survey from her perspective and her own experience with addiction pointed out the nature of the lives that these youngsters were living. So we followed up by asking the kids to write their stories. And, you know, we had 6 or 7 simple questions, and we get 7 or 8 pages back. And when we read the stories, we realized we were far more clueless than we thought we were. Mm-hmm. So we reproduced the stories, passed them around. They wound up in Senator Leahy's office and Maggie Gendron and the Department of Education and Dr. Charles Johnson, and that led to a concern that these stories really needed to be shared with the public to understand what these youngsters are going through, and that's why we got in touch with Bess, and again, the rest is history.
Well, I want to play a little bit more from the film The Hungry Heart. We'll hear a couple of clips here now. These are the voices of the young people themselves describing the impact that their prescription drug addiction has had on their lives. So first of all, in this scene, we'll hear a couple of voices from patients of Dr. Holmes describing in part why they began taking opiates, because quite frankly, it was filling something that they felt was missing within them.
I had that hole, and once I started drinking and using, that hole got filled up, and it was, you know, if I was messed up, that hole was gone, and I was okay in my own skin.
I was waiting for something to make me feel whole.
That hole that I have talked about that has been inside me since my first memory of being alive was full.
It was the only thing that gave me any sort of relief from what I was feeling. You know, it didn't betray me. It didn't go behind my back and talk about me. You know, it was like you were there when I needed you.
But of course, the cost of filling that hole, and especially if you're going to fill it with prescription drugs, opiates, and heroin, is profound. And one of the moments in the film that really stays with you is when these young people describe the actual financial cost that their addictions had on their lives.
At my worst, I could spend, $500 a day, easily.
For me, it was about $600 a week. No, $600 a day. I was doing about 680s a day.
My addiction was costing me $4,200 a week. Yeah.
Sometimes I was spending up to $10,000 a week or $3,000 a day on my habit.
Incredible numbers there from The Hungry Heart. Bess O'Brien, briefly, if you could just describe, how did you convince these young people to be so honest with you about the depths of their suffering with their addiction?
Well, you know, people ask me that all the time about my films, and I think that, because I make a lot of, this is, you know, I don't know, my 7th or 8th film I've made here in Vermont around pressing issues and sort of things that are often seen or not seen that I hope to bring forward and sort of shed light on. But, you know, I think when people are asked if they want to tell their story, if they say yes, they are ready to talk. And I also think that, for instance, people in this film who have been struggling with addiction, you know, most people don't really ask to hear their stories. We often hear about addiction in the sense that we hear about statistics or criminal activities, but we don't really want to sit down and say, I want to spend 2.5 hours just listening to what it's like to be a drug addict and what it's like to get clean and why is it so difficult and what are your struggles and what are your hopes and dreams and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I found that I had no problem talking to people. And in fact, I shot 150 hours of footage on this movie, way too much. but I could have talked longer for days with these folks. And I mean, I also give Fred a lot of credit because many of these people were patients of Fred. And I think the fact that Fred was so incredibly generous in letting me and my videographer into his office to shoot all this footage and all this intimate detail with him talking to patients, and we totally broke the patient confidentiality clause.
Well, I presume with their permission. But, yes, but Dr. Holmes, I have to ask you, I mean, Bess just mentioned like the intimacy with which we get to know your patients featured in the film. I mean, there are many scenes inside Mousetrap Pediatrics, your pediatric practice, and you see like the regular trappings of a pediatrician's office, you know, the little plastic slide and the toys and the kids' magazines in the waiting room. And you see these, you know, teenagers and young adults who are waiting to see you, many of whom I understand you knew virtually since they were born.
True story. It's interesting to hear these comments because that's the way my office was for over 40 years. It didn't matter why you were there. Everybody was treated the same, and that was the atmosphere that we worked in, and it was an enjoyable place to be, and I hope enjoyable for them. And the youngsters whose illness just happened to be addiction were not treated any different than anybody else, and they didn't behave any different or look any different. They just bit right into the schedule, and we, you know, we quote treated unquote them just like we would anybody else.
Well, let me ask you, Doctor. When one enters medical practice as a pediatrician, you think, I'm going to be treating children with a whole variety of diseases, you know, leukemia, right, the diseases of, you know, childhood, everything from runny noses to upset tummies and more serious things later on. But you're not necessarily trained to treat the disease of addiction. Did you have to rethink your approach to your patients as you were dealing with this disease?
Well, the rules of the game are a bit different. I have to tell you, I watched the movie again last night in front of the state legislators, and for me last night it was very sad to watch it because I knew those kids, I knew them well. You know, they say history is written by the winners. So the folks that were in the movie were kids that were successful at that moment in their lives. And I added them up last night while I was watching the movie that at least 8 of them, after the movie was finished and I retired, I know are no longer doing so well. And so there's that great gray cloud, which is addiction itself, that is it's hard to anticipate what's going to happen. It's hard to anticipate the behavioral changes. It's hard to anticipate the dire outcomes that nobody would wish on anybody. But so it's easy to learn to prescribe so many milligrams of something for a certain illness. It's extremely difficult to understand addiction and the behavioral aspects of it and what it does to lives. And we were having a long conversation this morning around some of the young folks who have every conceivable opportunity opened up to them through a variety of state resources, but they just seem to have difficulty making that phone call or making the decision to access those services. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to watch.
Well, in the film, there's a clear sense that the mix of factors that go into leading these young people down the path towards addiction is very, very complicated.
Extremely complicated.
And I want to play a scene that sort of drives home this point. And also it just highlights how you interact with your patients. And it's a scene where there's a young woman in your office, and she tells you about how she became an addict and how old she was when she first started. And she tells you she was 12 years old and that she got her first pills from her mother. So let's listen.
I remember I took a spoon and put like sugar and salt and flour in it and then water and then burnt it and took a penny and pretended that it was crack.
I cannot begin to tell you how sad I am.
Yeah, but I don't want your pity. You know what I mean? I don't want people's pity or sympathy or any of that. I just want to do good. I just want some support.
Right.
And I want to raise my son.
When I tell you I'm sad, I don't pity you. I think you've done some amazingly good work over the last couple of years. That's what impresses me.
Very powerful moment, Dr. Holmes. There's another patient, if I could, that I want to have our listeners hear a little bit about. And it's a young man named Stevie. And the reason why I'm going to play this clip, I'll ask you about it in just a moment. But you're treating him with Suboxone. And in this clip, you sort of have to deal with a moment where he may not be taking the Suboxone in the way that he's supposed to. So let's listen to that.
You know, if you take 2.5 one day and the next day you only try and take 2, you're gonna detox a bit, you're going to feel a bit sick, and that's going to make you use more. So like we talked about before, you have to stick to 2 a day.
Okay. Sitting at home all day doing nothing, and it makes me want it.
Use. I think you're afraid of your addiction right now. I think you're afraid that you're going to do something. Can't have that happen. Okay, we got some work to do, Stevie.
Dr. Holmes, in that clip, it seems like you swing from sort of doctoring mode to slight frustration that maybe Stevie isn't quite on board with the program, and then right back through that huge sigh to compassion. How often did you feel that mix, that even frustration?
Oh, a lot. I mean, you and I and Beth, we all get up in the morning and get dressed at the same time and get in the same cars and go to the same jobs and make money and pay bills and go out to the movies on the weekends and have this sort of cause and effect success sequence in our lives. I mean, I think that's what we do. These kids don't have that. And in that clip that I think you played, when Stevie sits there and says, sitting around all day with nothing to do, all I want to do is use. And I think that's true, and the number of folks that we have talked to or hoped that Stevie would talk to around turning his life around is huge. Our success has been somewhat limited, and that's because Stevie really leads a life that is foreign to us, and he doesn't have much to move forward with. It's sort of sad, but the single missing piece of Stevie's future is his birth certificate. He has no valid identification. Hmm. And the sad thing is that birth certificate is in New York State, just on the other side of Lake Champlain. For you and I, it would be easy to drive to Plattsburgh to get it. For Stevie, that's an insurmountable barrier.
Yeah. Bess O'Brien, you're the filmmaker behind The Hungry Heart, and now it's being seen all over Vermont. And you were also there when Governor Shumlin gave his State of the State address. And you heard that, you know, that the governor, he has a pretty aggressive goal or plan to help curb the opiate addiction plague or epidemic in Vermont. He wants more treatment programs. He asked for more money for rapid intervention. He also wants to toughen law enforcement to discourage high volume dealers from operating in the state. Do you get a sense that any of that is going to get any traction in Vermont?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, to me, the most important thing that the governor did was, first of all, he took the entire hour or whatever he had for his State of the State and focused on one issue. And it just happened to be this one, which is a major issue to tackle. And I think that was very courageous, a little bit risky, but I think it's panned out. I mean, I think I'm sure you saw the New York Times op-ed last week saying, you know, all of the other State of the States of governors were the most boring things you could possibly imagine, except for Vermont, where they took on this one issue and just hammered it home. I think that, you know, the most important thing that he did beyond that was to switch the conversation around addiction from this is a criminal problem to this is a health problem. Mm-hmm. And these are human beings. They are your neighbors, your sisters, your brothers, your coworkers, and we need to stop throwing them in jail because that doesn't work, and we need to get them into treatment. And in Vermont, we don't have enough treatment facilities that can take these people. We don't have enough beds. There are waiting lists.
Yeah.
The governor is saying that he wants to tackle that, and I hope he does. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, this is definitely not a Vermont thing. I mean, I think that it's sort of touched on something because, as you say in the very beginning of the show, the Green Mountain State, the perfect Vermont, the idyllic place to go and, you know, go skiing and you know, swimming in the summer, and isn't it perfect? Well, it's obviously it's not perfect.
Right.
And but the problem is that this is everywhere, all across the country. And I think the fact that we've stepped it up and that the governor has put this forward is terrific.
Well, finally, if I may, Dr. Holmes, in the last couple seconds that we have, it's revealed in during the course of the film that you have retired now. And so in St. Albans, who's sort of picking up where you left off helping these young people?
Oh, that's easy. We're very fortunate. Franklin County, where St. Albans is about 10 years ahead of the rest of the state. There are seven other physicians who participate in medication-assisted therapy. There's good relationships between substance abuse, mental health, the hospital, and the primary care doc. So when I went to retire, it was actually fairly easy to refer my patients specifically onto the other docs to make sure they got care.
Yeah. Well, one of the most touching moments in the film for me was when I believe it was Lexi, a young woman who said that she's never been considered anyone's kid, but she considers herself...
That was Katie.
Katie, I'm sorry, Katie, but that she cried when she thought she's one of Fred's kids. I mean,
yeah.
The love that she felt from you is extraordinary. Well, Dr. Fred Holmes is a longtime pediatrician in St. Albans, Vermont. His story and his practice and the people he's reached out to there are at the center of the new film, The Hungry Heart. Dr. Holmes, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Bess O'Brien, director and producer of The Hungry Heart, thank you as well. Especially thank you for making this film and joining us today.
Thank you.
And listeners, leave your comments about the scourge of opiate addiction all over New England. You can leave your stories with us at radioboston.org. There's more of the show coming up in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.